seize the day. Seize the day. That whisper is similar to what happens when the clue phone rings. The clue phone is that thing internally that we all have that's able to interpret signals, whether subtle or not so subtle, that something needs to change, something needs to be different. And I'm just finding very, very few people are able to hear the ring of the clue phone and then actually pick it up. Very few people are self-aware enough to know what's going on internally, what's going on in the world around them, and what is the still whisper of God about what needs to happen in the midst of our lives. We sense that the clue phone was ringing this last week. The clue phone's actually ringing at Crossroads, and we chose to seize the day. Let me tell you a little bit why we chose to do this. We actually were going to talk about work this week. The clue phone's ringing at work. We're going to push that back. That's going to happen next week. We've inserted this week because it just seemed like there was subtle and not so subtle clues that many of you are not understanding what this place is about. So I want to talk about that. The vast majority of the people who've been involved in this church in the first 6 years or so prior to us coming over here, you were self-professed seekers. You were people who were not sure who God was, if God was real, who is Jesus, who is he the Son of God or not? What should that mean in my life? The vast majority of you, this is your very first church home that you've ever been a part of. And then when we opened up this church and we started to go in a new phase, all of a sudden, interesting things happen. We've exploded by 50% of our growth has happened. And of that 50%, disproportionately, there's been a lot of people who have looked at us as now a good alternative to my previous church-going experience. Now, you know, I found a nicer church that I'm going to go there. And now it's a little bit of a different makeup with all of you who are newer coming in. And I want to make sure that we have some clear communication with you today about some subtle things that happen around here that you need to be able to interpret. One of the things that you might find shocking is that we are not an American church. I mean, we've gotten so many connect cards and so many phone calls and so many letters and so many, you know, confrontational times out in the atrium with our other volunteer ministry leaders. And we realize it stems from one common misunderstanding is that people think that we're an American church. We are not an American church. Because when you think an American church, you think about all kinds of values that other American churches have, all kinds of methods that other American churches have, all kinds of modus operandi. If that's a phrase, is that a phrase? Modus operandi? I know modus operandi is, but, you know, I've never done it plural before. And then all that is baggage is put on this place and said, well, something is wrong. Now, we are a church, and we are in America, but we don't play by the rules of American churches. Let me explain this a little bit for you. I've grew up in church my whole life. I've been on staff at a few different churches, and I've never been able to bring my friends, my normal friends, to a church I've gone to. I just could never have done that. You know, we call people, those of you who maybe don't have a relationship with God, you're called seekers or something like that. You know, there's a better word for you. Normal. Normal. If you are a person who goes to church, you are abnormal today. Only about 30% of America goes to church on a week in, week out basis. Only about 30%. So for normal people, normal Americans, there's not a value for church. There's not a value for many things that are talked about in church. And I could never take one of my normal friends, of which I've always had normal friends, to a church service without sitting there through them and going, oh, man, oh, why are they doing that? Why are they saying that? Oh, no. Why? Oh. I just could never do it, never would. And so I started to get very uneasy about that because I really felt that that was something that God was not happy about. And the clue phone started ringing in my heart about this a long time ago, saying, this is not right that the American church exists for church people. That is not right. Then I had my last performance review at my last church, and the clue phone rang in that performance review. I sat there and I said, this has been a blessing for me, this church. This church has grown me. There's been a lot of neat stuff that's happened. I've been happy to be an ordained Presbyterian and be at this good Presbyterian church, but I got this subtle internal feeling that said, you know, Brian, if you were going through a performance review a year from now, you have dishonored God. And I just realized the clue phone was ringing and my run was done. And I walked out of that. I remember walking out of Jay Clark's restaurant saying, God, if I have to do this a year from now, I'm going to have to ask your forgiveness for sinning because I will have disobeyed you because I know that you have something different for me. So at that point, My wife Libby and I said, let's see if we can figure out how to be a part of a church that reaches and touches our friends, our normal friends. And what do you know? There was 11 people who lived in the Hyde Park Mount Lookout area who had the same desire, who all went to good churches, really good churches here in the Cincinnati area, different churches, but they all realized the same thing. They couldn't bring their normal young professional friends to those churches. There was too much baggage. There was too many assumptions that were made. The communication style wasn't in sync. There was too much judgmentalism. There was too much all this type of stuff. And what do you know? We met through a very spiritual means called the want ads. Answered and connected, and Lib and I moved here, and it was like a match made in heaven, because it was a match made in heaven, because God was doing something significant in bringing people together for the common purpose of reaching normal people. And today is all about doing the same stuff that God has been calling us to do, and it's rooted in principles that are as old as the Bible itself to make this a special place. And today the clue phone is going to ring for you. It's going to ring loud and clear. And it's going to ring because we're going to take a look at one of the events in Jesus' life. Let's take a look at this event from Jesus' life. It comes from the book of Mark 6, 1 to 6. It says this, Jesus left there and went to his hometown accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things, they asked. What's this wisdom that's been given him, that he even does miracles? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, only in his hometown, among his relatives, in his own house, is a prophet without honor. He could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their lack of faith. Now, the clue phone was ringing here. Clue phone was ringing in this thing for Jesus. And Jesus was aware of things that were happening here. And I'm going to just pull out three things that were happening that Jesus learned as the clue phone was ringing in this story here. First is this. Jesus learned that being real brings conflict. Being real brings conflict. When you look at Jesus' life, you can find out very clearly that Jesus had no interest at all in pleasing people. It was not a concern for him. He wasn't validated by people cheering him. He wasn't depressed when people didn't cheer him. He didn't alter his schedule. He didn't alter his teaching. He didn't alter anything to please anybody around him. And as a result of that, there was massive conflict that took place in his life, around his life, 24/7. It never stopped. It went on and on and on and on. And that is because the heart of the human condition is we are not used to realness. When somebody is real with us, when somebody is straightforward with us, and somebody doesn't really care about pleasing us, it evokes a response in us. He's teaching the people the scriptures, and these people are thinking to themselves, who in the world are you? In fact, here's what it says. It says, and they took offense at him. They took offense. Let's think about this. This is a guy who's never hurt anybody. It's a guy who only has other people's best interests at heart, but they took offense at him. All around Jesus' life, there was conflict all the time. You know, Crossroads, we are an equal opportunity offender. We are an equal opportunity offender. Everybody gets offended here sooner or later. Everybody gets offended here sooner or later. And sometimes people get offended because we do something in poor taste that isn't, or that's stupid. But most of the time, people get offended because we are not used to realness. We are not used to straightforward talk. We are not used to being presented with truth that we haven't applied to our lives, that we haven't lived, and then challenged. We're not used to somebody standing toe-to-toe with us and saying, there is a better way. There's a better way. You will be offended here, and many of you have, on a regular basis. Get ready and get over it. It's coming. It's constant. And it's because we as Americans are not used to receiving truth in a humble, straightforward way that challenges our perspectives. And Jesus' people, the people around him, weren't used to that either. And when he would talk about how life ought to be lived and how God ought to be followed and how God ought to be served and how there was a better way, people didn't know how to categorize that. During every service last week, we talked about something that is very biblical. There's nothing radical at all we talked about. We talked about clue phones ringing in the bedroom. We talked about sex. There wasn't a single thing last week that was radical. Not a single thing. Everything was talked about was something that comes, there are values that come straight from the pages of Scripture. And to every service, we had multiple people leave. And I don't want to cast judgment why some people would leave, because there might have been inner stuff that people just weren't ready to deal with at that moment. But people left because we weren't ready for that level of realness. That is the same level of realness that Jesus had every day of his life, 24/7. That level of realness. Sometimes it's really fun, isn't it? Like last week, some of you were married, you were digging that, you know, you're enjoying that. I had a guy I played basketball with. He came last week and he said, yeah, you know, I was going to bed last night, and just before I was, you know, ready to turn off the light, my wife said to me, "Aren't you going to fulfill your marital duty?" He said, "I need to come to church more often." I said, "That's right, you do. That's right. You watch. 9 months from last week, we're going to have a building campaign in Kids Club. 9 months from last week, the nursery expands, explodes. It'll be great, 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 great stuff." Now, there shouldn't have been anything unique about that, though. That's the kind of stuff that Jesus did every day. It's the kind of stuff that's through the Bible over and over and over again. But for many of us who are expecting an American church, you didn't have any way to categorize that. Because American church does religion. American church just, you know, does nice fluffy stuff. American church just puts us in our nice patterns. American church just focuses on all of us who have the same values and the same beliefs, and we're all in the little holiness club. That's what American church does. American church is just, and I'm one of them. I've been one of them. I understand American church better than anybody. Problem is, you read Jesus' life, you read the best four biographies that have ever been written about Jesus. The best four biographies are called Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The first four books in the New Testament. I just challenge you, friends, if you're an American church, go read them yourself, and you're going to find there's virtually nothing in common with Jesus' life in the American church. Read it. Read it yourself. You read that stuff, and you find that Jesus was interested in normal people. He did life in a real way, and he didn't worry about all these little committees and all this stuff and all that. He did life with normal people. That was the role of his life. That was everything he did. And people got upset that he hung out with normal people, and people got upset that he was real with people, and it created conflict. You know, we think that those of us who are American churchgoers, you know, we think that there's something about us that's going to make a difference. Hey, clue phone's ringing. Clue phone's ringing. You know, what about your life or our life is attractive to someone who doesn't go to church or is a seeker? What, our judgmental attitude, our code of morality, our lapel pins, our bumper stickers, our political viewpoints? Get a clue. Are all those things bad? No, they're not bad. They just don't make any difference. Jesus made a difference because he did real life with real people. And it created conflict. One prominent sociologist, well-known sociologist, said this: "Can't we all just get along?" It was Rodney King, great sociologist. The very clear answer from history is no, we can't. We can't all get along. We can't. Especially we can't get along when we really want to make life change. Especially we can't get along when we want to speak truth in the appropriate way to one another. Especially we can't get along when we say there's something about your life, something about our life that needs to change. And so conflict, and if you're going to be around here, it is constant. It's constant. Because we want to challenge. We want to provoke. We want to stimulate. My father-in-law told me last week about my father-in-law's been coming to church. They moved from Pittsburgh to come here and be a part of this, and told me about a interaction he had where somebody was an American churchgoer, and now we're on their acceptable menu of churches, and so they've been coming and informed my father-in-law there's been five other families that they know of, and I don't know who those people are, and I didn't ask, and I, you know, really don't care to know. But they informed him that they've got this letter-writing campaign going where they're committed. Every time they come in here, the five of them, they got a coalition to just write connect cards and say, "Turn the music down, different music, turn the music down." And see, that's good stuff in American churches. That's how American churches operate. American churches operate by consensus. American churches operate by committee. American churches operate by, "Oh, man, let's not offend people." And that's an understandable way to react in an American church, but we're not an American church. You know? Are we open to feedback? Absolutely. Have we changed because of some feedback? No question about it. But we change because we realize there has to be something to change because we're on mission. We are not on mission to be a bigger church that attracts American churchgoers. That's not our mission. So comments about that, it's like spitting a spitball at a cannon, you know? That doesn't affect. Doesn't affect. A friend of mine, a normal friend of mine, come a couple weeks ago, he's a normal guy. I don't think he would call himself the Christ follower. He's 50 years old, and he and his wife and his, you know, he said, music's a little too loud. Well, I said, I didn't think the music was too loud. And he said, well, I guess those 30-somethings just, you know, kind of like that. I thought to myself, here's a guy who doesn't align himself with the Bible, who gets it better than people who say they are aligned with the Bible. Because he realized it isn't about him. That's Jesus' whole life. It's not about you. It's about what God is doing. It's not about you and your wants and your preferences and your desires. It's about what God is doing and getting on the God page. If you want some help in trying to figure this whole thing out, at our next level, we have the next level breakouts, and one of the breakout sessions is going to be Difficult Conversations, where Miss Queen Hard Conversation herself, Cindy King, is going to be leading that. And I just encourage that. So that's the first learning that Jesus had, is that conflict comes. People can't handle realness. The second clue that Jesus got, the second learning, is that it is easier to be a fan than a follower. It's easier to be a fan than a follower. So last week, I went into the gym, and I found out when I went into the gym that one of the guys said, hey, did you hear about so-and-so, who was a trainer there? I said, no. I said, well, he's not here anymore. I said, you're kidding. They said, no. The guy said, no, and I'm not happy about it either. I thought to myself, yeah, you know, I'm not too happy about this either. I mean, this guy's helped me do a stretching regimen and a back exercise regimen to where my back used to be really bad and used to go out. It just doesn't go out anymore. It's like a non-issue. Something like myself, what is up with that? This dude has like had a major impact in my life. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I need to go like find out what the heck is going on. And I realized, no, I don't. No, I don't. Because I want to be a follower. And I want to trust those in leadership unless they show that they have a consistent track record of dishonoring God or doing the wrong thing. See, we talk in America about there being a crisis in leadership. There might be, but there's more of a crisis in followership. No one wants to follow. No one wants to follow. We want to be fans. We want to go to find a winning team in a place that has the nicest seat, in a place that has the best weather, in a place that has the best team or the best music or the best speaking. We want to sit there and go, 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 go. But to be a follower means I get on the field of play, and it means I don't have the options that fans have. Starts raining, a fan, you leave. Better team comes to town, you go there. What's a follower do? What's a player do? What does someone on the team? Hey, I am in this. I follow. I'm on task. I'm on mission. Jesus wanted to create a community. He wanted to create a church where there was a team of people who were on the followership plan, following God's will, God's desires for their life. And there was a very strange and unique thing that was happening while he was interacting in this story. Let's take a look at it. Here's what it says. These people are looking at him and going, what's this wisdom that's been given to him that he even does miracles? Let's go back to that last screen just for a moment. That he even does miracles. These people are looking at him going, hold on, who are you? You're Jesus. You're the guy who built my table. You're just this normal carpenter dude, and you're out and you're doing these miracles. What happened to you? And then they go on this next thing, and they say, it says, he could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. Now, you know, when I first read this, I thought to myself, this is really strange. On one hand, people are getting offended and being real, and they're getting, it's saying that they're kind of amazed that he's doing miracles and trying to figure out, okay, who's Jesus? Normal guy, but maybe he's not all that normal because he's doing stuff only God could do. And then it comes here and said he could not do any miracles except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. Sounds like miracles to me, doesn't it? So what's he talking about? What kind of miracles? The miracle of going from a fan to a follower. We get all, you know, some people, hey, I want to see miracles. And we get all into thinking of, okay, could I see some healings or like Red Sea parted or stuff. You know, we all want to see this dramatic, flashy David Copperfield stuff. You know, who was at the Aronoff recently. We all want to see that kind of stuff. You know what? That's cool stuff. But you know what the greatest miracle of all is? The greatest miracle of all is when someone gives their heart to Christ. The greatest miracle of all is when someone says, I will go from being a fan of my own agenda, a fan of all my preferences, a fan of all my personal values, to being a follower of Christ. That is the greatest miracle under heaven. There's no greater miracle, no more unbelievable, earth-shattering thing that happens when somebody says, I will go from being a follower of self to being a follower of Christ. And by the way, whether or not you go to a church has nothing to do with whether or not you're a follower of Christ. You know, I can go to a garage every day. I'm not a car. You know? It is a miracle when someone orients their life Godward. It is a miracle. It is an unbelievable miracle when people orient their life Godward. And people kept trying to get Jesus to change his perspectives or change his mode of ministry. They did. They said, no, don't do that. Don't go with those people. Don't do that kind of this. Don't go. And they just kept giving him all kinds of pressure because they wanted to cheer somebody who was telling them what they wanted out of their life. And the pressure that he had was unbelievable because all kinds of fans that were around him all the time, throngs of people that were watching the latest thing. But when it came down to people who actually get on the Jesus plan and get behind him and follow him, it just wasn't happening. And it is a miracle when someone does that. A miracle. We have no passion here at all for building a big church. No desire for that at all. None. Now, if our church gets big because we have people who go from fans to followers, wonderful. We have no passion at all for being the latest place where everyone in Cincinnati who likes churches says, that's a cool church. We have no desire for that at all. It doesn't slightly interest us. Desire for our normal friends to be able to say, oh, that's what you're talking about. That's what it means to be a Christian. That's what it means to be a follower of God. And before you look to change anything around here or get upset with anything around here, you need to ask yourself, is this for me so I can be a better fan, more excited about stuff? Or is this because I'm a follower and I feel this way because my normal friends who I'm going to bring need to experience this? Let me help you out a little bit here on just a few things. Examples for you. Don't ask for the music style to be changed. Don't ask. Don't ask for it to be changed. This is the kind of music that our normal friends listen to. It's the kind of music our normal friends listen to when they go to a concert, when they put in a CD. It's the kind, it's the tone, it's the volume level. And so it is a strategic thing for us to say, this is how we want this thing to feel because it communicates in a language that our normal friends understand. And that's what Jesus did. He communicated in a language that normal people understood. That's why we do it. Don't ask for communion in forums like this on Sunday morning. Communion is for people who understand the mystery of those elements and have become followers and have placed their heart into Christ's hands. Communion is not a nice, interesting religious exercise. And the Bible is very clear. The communion is for people who have made that wholehearted commitment, not for people who are just trying to figure it out and counting the costs. I would never invite my normal friends over to my house and pass food around the table and say, okay, now this, you can't eat this. Don't eat the hamburgers. You can have everything else. Don't have the hamburgers. And that's why we don't do that here, because we're on mission. Don't ask for the teaching style. The one thing that Brian Wells and I hear often as speakers, you know, the common verbiage, those of you who don't go to church or this is your first place, I'll give you some words that are very common for churchgoers. Feed me. Say, I don't get fed. I don't get fed. You know, here's the thing. If you aren't getting fed, you're an American churchgoer, then eat! Eat! Pick up your Bible and eat. What are you, bulimic? Pick it up and eat. He's someone like, force, eat! Eat! But see, that's American church. American church says, let me tell you everything you want to hear and do the interesting form. And just so you go, you leave, you go, interesting. But what life changes happen in your life? Unfortunately, not much. If you look at, the statistics are very clear. If you look at the way that average churchgoers lead their life and people who are atheists lead their life, there's virtually no difference. There's virtually no difference. There's no difference in the divorce rate. There's no difference in the sexual appetites, the sexual The sexual patterns, there's even no difference in the way, in the number of times in which people read the Bible. We teach here to connect with normal people to inspire life change, not to fit a specific form of teaching that takes place in the American church. Third thing that Jesus learned, the third clue, was a lack of faith. Lack of faith is normal, but abnormal at the same time. Lack of faith is normal, but abnormal. See, to Jesus, having faith isn't having the right beliefs. That's not faith. To Jesus, having faith is not blindly accepting something that you think goes contrary to science. That's not faith. That's what we tend to think is faith. What faith is when you come to a place where you trust in God, where you orient your life Godward, and you trust in God, you put your life into His hands, and you say, I will live my life today the way Jesus lived His life yesterday. I will try to take on the attitude that you want me to have, and I will trust in you even when I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. I will trust in you. I will place my life's welfare in your hands. And lack of faith is normal. It's normal. But at the same time, it's abnormal. Look what it says at the end of this passage. And he was amazed at their lack of faith. He was amazed at their lack of faith. You know, we're amazed by people's faith. Oh man, I'm amazed. You know what he's amazed by? He's amazed by their lack of faith. Why? Because they've seen him doing great teaching. They've seen miracles. They've watched his life. And though they couldn't figure out, okay, hold on, carpenter doing this stuff, he knows that they haven't seen any impropriety in his life. And he's looking at them, he's amazed. He's amazed by their lack of faith. You know what? I think Jesus is more amazed by the lack of faith in churches in America than by the faith in people's lives. He's amazed by it. He's amazed because it says, how can you believe this stuff? How can you place yourself in a church and have it not totally affect the core of your being and affect everything in your life? It amazes him. Every once in a while, someone will give a suggestion or voice a complaint, and they'll mention subtly how much they give to me. They'll mention, you know, I'm a tither, which is giving 10% of your money back to God, which is what the Bible talks about, or they'll mention the figure or whatever, and I'll talk to them and I'll say, now, you know, are you mentioning how much you give right now because you want to add extra weight to what you'd like to have happen? And I'll say, oh, no. And of course, yes, they were. Yes, they were. And I'll just give them a little teachable moment. I'll say, you know what? You know, in American churches, that's fair game. In American churches, you know, my money buys something. But we're not an American church. We give here because it's a faith decision in following Christ, not because we get more perks. It's one of the reasons why there's not a single name anywhere in this building, never has been, never will be. Because that draws attention to somebody. It draws attention to self as opposed to drawing attention to God. And it would be small faith. It would be a lack of faith that would amaze Jesus. We started doing funky stuff like that. Jesus is amazed when people claim to be on God's team but don't trust God. I think Jesus was amazed when people told me, Brian, don't leave your denominational security to go with people in Cincinnati you've never met before. Jesus was amazed that people would say that. Jesus was amazed by the people we've invited to be on this team here who said, no, I'm going to keep comfortable one place where just I can do my own thing. I think he was amazed by that. Jesus was amazed the people who said, you'll never have a building of your own. Now we have 86,000 square foot and 16 acres. Why? Because God showed up. Jesus was amazed, the lack of faith, because all these things are signs of lack of faith. I think Jesus was amazed that people said, you'll never raise that money out of people who don't like church or weren't going to church before. You'll never do that. He was amazed by that because it didn't understand how significant of a life change has taken place in people's lives. I think he was amazed by people who refuse to be on the team and be followers. I think he's amazed when people say, my life can never be different. My relational life can never be different. My sex life can never be different. My financial life can never be different. My dating life can never be different. I just can't be helped. I think he's amazed at that because he says, oh, don't think that way. With me, it's possible because I do miracles. I do miracles. It is not normal for people to be fully committed followers of Christ. It is not normal. And it is also not normal if you are a Christ follower to not have a community, to not have a church where you say, this is where I grow, this is where I give, this is where I'm a part of. That's also not normal. You know, because American churches, pastors say this. We say, hey, and I'm one of them, so I can talk this way. We say, hey, whatever it takes to get more people hearing me so I have my ego stroke, great. Hey, whatever it takes to get more people to give more money so I have more security and I might not go without a paycheck, great. Hey, whatever it takes to have us validated by having people liking us, great. And so we feel good when people just come into our doors for any reason. Except here, we don't feel good about that. We hope it's a starting place to something. We don't feel that that's ultimately the end game. Speaking with somebody recently who was going to another really good church, not an American church, you know, in the way I'm talking about, but a really good church. And they said, yeah, you know, we've been coming here and there, and boy, it's really tough. It's really tough doing that. And I said, well, don't. And they said, oh, you just come here, right? I went, no, don't, stay there. So or come here. If you want to come here, that's fine. Come here. But ultimately, you've got to find a place where you can be committed to, where you can be a follower, you can be part of the team. You know, the American church hopping experience is something we think is normative, but it's not biblical. That's what American churches think. America does not need another church that satisfies fans. America doesn't need another church that satisfies and is a haven for the religious right. America doesn't need another church that tells people, I'm okay, you're okay, all God's the same, and do whatever you want. And some of you say, oh, good, ooh, good. So Crossroads is moderate, right? Because that's why I'm moderate. No, we're not moderate at all. We're passionate. We're just not passionate about fitting in specific camps. We're passionate about taking a look at who Jesus was, what is the basic message in the Bible, and saying, that's our deal. That is what we do. What's our deal? Our deal is connecting seekers to a community of growing Christ followers. We believe that sums up the basic life of Jesus, and that affects everything we do. Everything. People all around you have given your life to this. People who've received Jesus and made a commitment have given their life to this. Those of you who are seekers, you know, you've been around. This is the kind of stuff we've been calling you to. You know, it's funny, those of you who are seekers, you get this stuff more than people who are in the American church. You haven't received it yet. You haven't made a commitment to it yet, but you get this more. You're like, oh, yeah, what's the interesting thing? What's so interesting? Well, it shouldn't be interesting. We want to embrace this place. We want to get people coming to a place where they say, I see what God is doing in Cincinnati and in this place. We want to embrace this place. Video, I kind of got a glimpse of somebody in here I had a conversation with earlier. And I'm doing a memorial service next week. After the service for a guy who's, you know, been coming to Crossroads and, you know, passed on this last week. And just interesting to talk to the life about the transformation, the difference in the life. First church experience he ever had was here. It's going to be a great memorial service. It'll be a great memorial service. Because he didn't play games with him and he didn't play games with us. And change happened. Change happened. Why? Because we want to be about embracing what God is doing in this place. Embracing what God is doing in the city. I don't really have any therefores for you. I really don't. My therefore, I mean, I'm not telling you write less comments on the Connect card. I'm not telling you serve someplace. I'm not telling you give more money. I'm not. I really don't. This is not about, all right, let's get people to do this. I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing I do know. I do know that there was stuff that's said here today that has set off the clue phone inside of your heart. I know that. I know that. I know there was something that's said here today. There's a subtle thing that's staying with you right now. You're having an internal reaction, and you got to figure out why you're having that reaction, and you got to figure out what your outcome is. The clue phone's ringing. It's for you. The clue phone's ringing. God is sending you a signal. Pick it up. Pick it up.